Brothers and sisters, welcome to the third episode of Rack, Fur, and Feathers. I am your host, Brent Ruff, and today, Adam and I are going to take you guys all the way from the field to the freezer. So for you rooks out there that have never butchered your own deer, this is a good one to listen to. So hope you guys enjoy.
All right, so how you been, man, since the last time I seen you?
Been good. Staying busy, shoveling snow this time of year, and
this fucking weather's retarded.
Yeah, it's wintertime in Michigan. That's what we get.
What do we got out there? 2 feet?
I think this week we got 2 feet, yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. About 14 inches in, what, 18 hours?
Something like that. And it's still coming. We got another 1 to 3 coming today. Supposed to have 2 to 6 by Monday morning.
How's the wedding shit going?
Oh, my God. Well, I told you a little bit about the engagement dinner last night. That was a fiasco. But it's going good, I guess. Going the way that it should go. Glad we're only doing this one time. This isn't something I'd like to do multiple times, so.
Seems stressful. All this shit to do.
Just over a wedding, you know. It's something that should be so simple and so happy. It's just expensive.
She's not turning into Bridezilla, is she?
Not yet.
No?
I try to make sure that doesn't happen. Take it one day at a time, though.
Right.
It's touch and go.
That's good. Yeah, so, before we start, though, I just want to thank Kyle Pallmatter. He's actually been doing all of our editing for us. He's just like us. He's got kids, a wife, a job, you know, he's busy trying to do
a
shit.
Life.
And he's been taking time out of his schedule to help us out for free. So
we very much appreciate that.
Very much. And he killed it on episode one. He did a great job. And also my brother, Bob Ruff, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Right.
If it wasn't for that. He lent us the equipment to be able to do this. And he's actually helping us out on the technical side of things too, because I can't do it by myself because I do shit like upload upside down videos to YouTube.
Yeah, well, we figured that out. It's a community effort. Everybody that's helped us out get this far, we really appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're going to do today is, so today's episode is focused on more the guy shoots a deer, right?
Right.
And he wants to process it.
Sure.
For the first time by himself. Now, you got two options when you shoot a deer. You can either take it to a butcher and drop it off.
Right.
Or do it yourself.
Right.
But there's a lot of things that weigh into that you know, decision. You got when you shot it.
Time of year.
Yeah.
Sometimes the time of day. Yeah, the weather. How cold it is outside, how hot it is inside, where you're going to take the deer. You know, how much money you got in your pocket at the time.
Absolutely.
How much free time you got.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, the weather's important because if it's too warm. Warm is bad.
Right.
Warm weather and meat do not mix. It breeds bacteria, and your meat's either going to go bad or you're going to eat it and get really sick.
And so, regret it. That's not what we want.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And, you know, so the guy doing it by himself, you know, it's about $80, $75, I think. I think you get it a little bit cheaper if you skin it out yourself first.
Yeah, it depends on where you go. This year I had mine done at a processor just because I didn't have time to do it. I was working, you know, 70 hours a week and trying to take care of a deer. When I got mine this year, the temperature had been cold enough that I could have hung it up for a while and done it myself, but it was warm enough for the week after I shot it. It was in the mid-50s, low 60s, so I couldn't just let it hang, like, in my backyard and have it be okay. I had to get it somewhere in a freezer, get the meat chilled so I don't lose it. So,
and that's a big thing. People need to realize that you don't kill a deer, get it hung up in the garage, and butcher it in the same day. You just don't do that. You got to let that meat age. It's got to hang for a while. what you're doing is the meat is actually decaying, but you're basically stopping it before it goes bad.
Yes, and it's a slow process. The meat doesn't just turn rotten overnight. You want some of the proteins in the meat, some of the connective tissue to have time to sort of break down a little bit. I've heard of guys leaving deer hang for up to 2 weeks or just a couple days. It's really up to you.
Yeah, those you got to give those enzymes a little time to break that shit down.
Right, correct. Like a controlled spoilage, like a really good dry-aged steak where they let it go rotten on the outside, you know, so that the inside can be fantastic.
Right.
We're not getting that involved with it. We're not saying let the deer go rotten, but it's best to hang it for, I'd say, at least 3 days, up to 2 weeks.
Yep.
Generally, the longer the better, but it depends on the weather.
You don't want to go too long.
Well, yeah, you don't want to let it hang six months or anything like that. But
I would feel uneasy if I let it hang more than 7 days.
Okay.
Personally. I mean, I'm sure you could, but that would just make me a little sketchy.
I've heard of guys like I got a friend, his mom does a lot of processing, and she's got a big cooler. And she'll leave deer hang for a couple weeks sometimes if they get busy. But it's possible to do in the right conditions. It's not recommended. It's better to let it hang for a little while, take it down, get to processing it.
And which weighs into your decision? What do you do with it after you shoot it? Like, right. I said, you know, you shoot a deer on a Tuesday night. By the time you track it, find it, get it clean, get it to the truck, it could be 9:30 at night, and you got to be to work at 5 o'clock the next morning.
Right.
And you, I mean, if you do it yourself, you still have to get it home. And like we said, you know, the clock is ticking as soon as you shoot that animal. I mean, you got to get the guts out right away, and then you got to get it hung. And I can always hear my dad's voice in the back. I'm like, get that fucking hide off that animal.
Yeah.
You know, so. So that definitely plays into your decision. I personally never take mine to a butcher anymore. I'd rather stay up a little later.
Sure.
Take care of shit. I mean, here's the thing. You don't need a cooler to put your deer in. You don't have to let it hang in a cooler. You can use a garage fridge.
Sure.
You know, clear it out, get all your beer out. You know? and then after you get it hung, quarter it up and stick it in there. And we're going to teach you how to do all that stuff. So let's start. You drop the buck and you're gutting it.
Right.
Now, we were just talking on the way here, me and you gut deer different ways.
Well, yeah, the end result is the same, but we kind of have a different approach. You, because you shoot more bucks than I do, you have more experience starting in a different spot.
The nits.
The nuts, yeah. This is where you start on the bucks that you shoot. I start on the does that I shoot, or even on the bucks that I shoot, in a different spot. We'll talk about why, but there's no... absolute 100% right way to do it. It's however you feel comfortable doing it, knowing that the end result is going to be a clean deer hanging, you know, with good meat on it.
Right.
So.
Right. Absolutely. So.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
Deer is down in the field. What do you do?
Go. What do you do?
Well, first we got to put a tag on it.
Absolutely.
First and foremost, you want to do legal beagle, tag the deer, you know, notch the tag with your knife, stick it on the antlers. Stick a hole in the ear, put it on a piece of rope.
Now the sticking on the antlers thing, I've seen a lot of people catching flack for that online.
Really?
Actually, yeah, you're supposed to, what is it? You're supposed to use a string.
Around them?
Put a string on it, and then so it's basically so whoever can read it. When you wrap it around the antler, you can't read enough.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So,
anyway. That makes sense. So I usually start, I'll roll the deer over on its back. I'll kind of get the legs spread if I got a kneel on either side of the legs to kind of keep it spread open. And I start right where the breastbone stops. Mm-hmm. And say the belly portion starts, because that is the widest part of the chest cavity. And I'll take my knife, start it in there just a little bit to get into the cavity inside the deer. You don't want to go too deep when you're opening a deer up, because there's a lot of stuff in there that you don't want your knife to touch. inexperience says get in there with a knife, you know, tear it open, get those guts out. But you really kind of have to be careful when you do that, because you don't want to nick the stomach. You don't want to cut the intestines.
For those of you that have done that,
you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's nasty. And it's
The smell is something you'll never forget. And it taints the meat. If any of that liquid, any of that product gets on.
The meat isn't ruined, but yeah, it's
yeah, unless you take very quick action. Yeah. It can have a disastrous effect on wherever that bile or those fluids kind of get touch. It's just not a good thing.
Right.
So I start there because that's where I've got the most room. you just make a little cut. It'll open up on you. You kind of want to get the tip of your knife in. And just to do this, I use a buck knife that's got kind of a rounded edge on the end of it to make it easier. Once I get inside of the cut, I can take that round edge, turn it upwards, and kind of run it down the length of the belly, sort of like a zipper.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. When you're doing this kind of, you rarely take a knife and cut outside in.
Correct.
What that does is it actually cuts those little hairs off, and then you're left with a fucking mess. There'd be hair everywhere. So typically, if you can, you want to cut outside in, blade pointed up.
Right. From the inside out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just run down the length of the belly. I'll open it up. We're talking about just opening up the cavity that all the intestines are inside. We're not talking about opening up any of the intestines. You want to try to avoid that as much as possible. Excuse me. So I'll get it opened up. I'll trace it down to the pelvic area. Now, this is where a lot of guys either break the pelvic, or they'll use a little saw to cut through, because part of that and getting the guts out is that's where the intestine runs through, that's the poop chute. You want to make sure...
you got to get the whole booty hole out.
Right. And some guys start there, they'll cut actually all the way around the butthole of the deer just to get that section isolated away from the hindquarters and the meat. So I'll get down to where the pelvis is. I use my knife to split it. I got a good strong knife with a strong back on it, and I keep the edge really sharp. You just kind of get in, you find the seam for it, and I sort of rock my knife a little bit to get it through there. Some guys don't do that at all. They'll cut around the butthole, and they'll just pull it through the pelvis area.
That's what I do.
Yeah, without, you know, cutting through the bone. I just prefer to cut through the bone myself so I know I get everything out. It's more for my, I don't know, my OCD more than anything else. I just like to make sure I get all that stuff out of there. So right. That's the way I feel more comfortable doing it. Once I get that cut, I will turn on the chest cavity, and I'll take my knife and run it straight down the center of the breastbone, the breastplate, until I split the ribs open. You can go all the way up through the ribs, up into the neck. You don't have to. For me, it makes it a little bit easier when I reach in there to pull the esophagus out. I don't have to get my arm up in there so far. But I'll split that open enough to where I can reach my hand inside of it. And I want to go as far up into the throat as possible. You'll feel the esophagus. It's like a corrugated tube, really. It's like that hose that has the wire that runs through the outside of it. So you reach up as far as you can in there. You kind of want to get a hold of it, pull it down a little bit, and then take your other hand with your knife. Now this is where if you split the chest cavity open, you'll be able to see what you're doing. If you've done it before, or if you trust, you know, your two hands to cut blind where you can't see what you're doing, you reach in there and you cut the esophagus out as far up into the throat as you can to get as much of that out of there as possible. And then from there, it's pretty much you hold on tight and just pull the guts out.
Pull and cut. I mean, you can see where all the connective tissue is and what it's holding, so just carefully slice and pull it away. How long would you say it takes you to do that?
Oh, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It's usually a pretty quick process. Yeah.
I was just going to say I'm a little bit more for speed, but...
Yeah.
Well, because I don't fuck with splitting the breastbone open or any of that. I start with the nuts, and then I get down into the abdominal.
Right, and
muscles.
This is where you have a different experience than I do, because with a doe, obviously they don't have nuts, or they shouldn't have nuts. We talked about that in the last episode, or the first episode.
Right.
Sometimes they do. It doesn't. I've never seen it in my life where I've had to deal with that situation, but that's the easiest spot to start on an animal that has testicles that hang.
Yeah, cut them off, and then cut down through the muscle.
Right.
And then you can kind of see the intestines will start to pop out.
Yeah.
I get my finger down in there and blade pointed up, run it up to the chest cavity, and then basically do all the same shit, but I'm going blind, just kind of going all by feel. Now, here's one thing that we forgot to mention. You fuckers need to be wearing gloves when you're doing that shit.
Yeah, it's really up. A lot of guys I know give me flack for wearing gloves, but... I feel better doing it just because...
It's like wearing a helmet on a motorcycle. It's pretty dumb not to. And I should follow my own advice more than I do. I really should. I mean, if you have a nick or a cut anywhere on your hand and you're in there, I mean, you're blood poisoning.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, your blood mixing with the blood of a wild animal, mm-hmm. and that is probably okay, but it's never ideal. It's never not something you want to do. And it's easy even, too, to nick your finger on a piece of bone. You know, if you're in there around the ribs, if you... damage the rib cage when you made your shot. You know, there are sharp things inside the deer that you have to worry about too. It's not just your knife.
Believe it or not, every once in a while you run into a broadhead that's stuck in your spine or something.
That happens.
I mean, yeah, it happens quite often. So,
gloves are important. I suggest wearing them if for nothing else, you know, other than when you're done, you can peel the glove off and hopefully you got two clean hands to get back in your truck with.
Right.
Sometimes in the woods when you're doing it, you want to do this, you don't want to shoot a deer, load it up, and then worry about gutting it later. You want to get the guts out of it as fast as possible after it's dead, just to get a lot of the temperature out of the deer. It helps cool it down quite a bit, getting all that mass out of the body cavity, because the name of the game is preservation of the meat, and part of that is cooling it down as fast as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got it gutted, you got it in the back of the truck, you're taking it home, everything's tagged, you're legal, you're clean because you wear your gloves and peel them off. You get it to your garage.
Yep.
Now, we need to talk about how to hang a deer, because I see kind of a mixture of people online anyway. I hang my deer head down. I see a lot of people hanging from the neck. I don't I don't necessarily want to say that's wrong. Because I don't know what the advantage of doing that is, though. I don't understand. Other than, like, if you were going to do, say, the golf ball method. For those of you who don't know what that is, you can, when you're skinning an animal, you can make your basic cuts before you start, and then you take a rock or a golf ball, and you stick it under the hide, make a knot under the hide, tie a knot with rope around it or a chain, and then basically hook it to a tractor or a truck.
And pull the hide off.
Pull the hide clean off. But other than that, I don't really see why. You know, I mean, like me and Ray were talking, and he looked up some stuff a while back about maybe it was something to do with mounts, right? That if you're doing a shoulder mount, you wouldn't want to do that because it would ruin the hide. Was it you that was telling me that? Oh, guess not. Somebody was. Somebody looked it up.
I guess I was raised, I've always seen my dad, my grandpa hang their deer by the legs, by the back legs. I know guys that hang deer, if they shoot a buck, they'll hang it by the rack just because it's easier to tie a rope around it. Some guys don't have
so
a gamble hook.
So they actually tie it to the actual antlers and hang it that way?
Yeah, I've seen guys do it, yeah.
Dude, me and my brother were pulling out a buck, this was years ago. I think it was his buck. And we were pulling it out of the woods, and the fucking antler snapped off.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little scuzzy fucker. But,
sure.
So, yeah, anyway, well, let's just get into hanging it. feet first. You're going to need a gambrel hook. If you don't know what that is, it basically looks like a coat hanger with two hooks on the end.
Right. It is designed to hang game with. And that, to me, having a gambrel hook, there's only one way to use it, and that's to hang it by the back feet. There's not really good access to the front legs.
Maybe that's why people hang it by the neck. Maybe they don't have one, and they tie a noose around its neck and yank it up.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to do it for some people. I myself don't have a gambrel hook, but I found that you can use a stick or just a broomstick if the deer is small enough, or a straight piece of a steel rod or anything, just to go through those two tenons in the back legs. Which you want to talk about?
That's where I wanted to get to is if you're going to use a gambrel hook. Now, on the back legs, like just it'd be above the knee. It's kind of like your Achilles heel on your ankle. There's a tendon right there, and then there's like a void. There's just skin, and then there's meat.
Yeah, almost like the webbing between a duck's toes.
That's perfect.
Sort of.
Yeah, webbing. So what you want to pop a hole on both legs right there.
Right. And then just a hole through. You don't want to actually cut that tendon because that's going to help hold your hook in.
And we'll tell you why here in a minute, or you'll see why. So you cut a slice on both sides. Run your gambrel hook in there. Hopefully you got some help.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, hunting and gutting and all that stuff, you can do it by yourself, but it makes a world of difference to have some friends.
And it's more fun. Shit, yeah. I love the atmosphere hanging a deer, man. Everybody's drinking beer. Everybody's excited.
Hopefully.
Fuck, it's a good time.
It's cold, but, you got all your buddies out in your garage, a couple guys to get underneath the deer to lift it up, and you tighten up the rope on the gambrel hook, and you got a deer hanging. I know a guy that uses a winch like off of a boat trailer. He's got one of those screwed onto the side of his garage, and he's got a pulley system set up to where he puts the gambrel hook in, and by himself, with the help of this winch, he can winch a deer up, without having...
Yeah, Ray's got one of those.
Yeah, and that's lights out if that's the way you want to do it. That's handy as hell. Like I said, there's no wrong way to do it as long as you get the deer hanging. It doesn't have to be on a gambrel hook. It doesn't have to be with a winch. It doesn't have to, it's got to hang. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
Right.
So, however you can get it up, if you want to tie a rope around the ankles on either side, run it up over your rafter and pull it up that way, more power to you. It doesn't have to, we're not saying you got to go out and buy this equipment and have this stuff on hand to do it.
Which a gambrel hook is what, 10 bucks?
Yeah, 10, 15 bucks probably, but, a lot of people don't know what they are because they've never had to use one. So
right. Okay, so you make your cuts, you get the gambrel hook in there, you get it up in the air, and you don't want to go too damn high because where you want to start the skinning process is just below where you made those cuts and by those tendons. Now,
where I call it around the back knee. For a point of reference.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. So that's where I kind of start my whole process. So basically, before you start skinning, you need to make sure you have a good, sharp knife. And you need to maybe have one. I like to use one it's kind of rounded at the end.
Yeah.
It's not straight like something like a paring knife, but something that's got kind of a curve to it.
Right. Sort of a little curve, I guess, is the way to say it, on the end of the knife.
Because you got to think about your strokes. because you're coming down like this, you know what I mean? And you don't want something straight because you're going to pop into the meat and you're going to...
Right.
Not knives, that you really give a shit about the hide unless you're doing something with it.
Knives but. Always work better when they're moved in two directions at the same time. So you're not just cutting straight down, you're cutting out and down or in and down. You know what I mean? Like you're not just stabbing at it. You're cutting and moving down as you cut.
Right.
And that's... You want the length of the blade to be curved so you can kind of use that curve to get a longer cut or a more effective cut when you're trying to remove the hide.
Right.
Like you said, the stroke is, you'll figure it out the first time you do it. There's an easy way to do it, and then there's an easier way to do it.
Well, if the deer's fresh, honestly, you're going to be doing more pulling than cutting anyway.
Right, right.
But
that's the...
If this is a deer that, say, you shot at a UP and it was 5 degrees all week, and then you brought it home, and now you're going to skin it. It's going to be a motherfucker.
Yeah, cold deer are insanely more hard to skin. Yeah. Ideally, you know, you shoot your deer, you get it home, you get it hanging, and you get the skin off it that night while there's still a little bit of heat in the body, because the skin holds a lot of that heat in, too. That's part of, you want to get the guts out fast, and you want to get the skin off as fast as possible in a situation where you don't have ideal temperature. You want to do everything you can to get that deer as cold as possible, as fast as possible. So getting the skin off also helps get a lot of that heat out of the meat and helps the deer begin to control, you know, spoilage hang.
Right, right.
Start to break down a little bit and age.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, and you don't need to keep it sharpener on it, too. You want to keep that blade sharp. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yeah, you definitely want to have a handheld sharpener. Next to you with you, or have a couple sharp knives that you're comfortable using.
You know,
if one knife goes dull, the easiest way to mess up is trying to cut with a dull knife. Because then you're going to try too hard, you're going to cut yourself, you're going to do damage to the meat, you know, trying to push too hard to make a cut. the sharper the knife, the better.
Right. So now where I start is, like I said, just below where you put that gambrel hook in by the knee, back of the knee. There's only two times in this whole process that you're going to be cutting from the outside in. I remember we talked about, because that kind of makes a mess. So you're going to go outside in just below where you made your incision with the gambrel hook and kind of cuff around that leg right there.
Right. You want to cut all around. The way around.
Yep. It's without cutting that tendon. Do not sever that tendon or you're going to be in for a surprise.
And this, surprise, it falls off the hook.
Yeah.
This is where having a sharp knife makes a big difference too, because you want to cut just the skin, like you said.
Yep.
And in this area in particular,
this is the most pain in the ass part, in my opinion.
Yeah, the skin is so tight right there around the knee. You know, like with on the hind quarter, you got a little bit of fat, a little bit of wiggle room in there where the skin has to flex and move. Here at the knee, the skin is so tight, and there's not really any meat underneath it. So
you need to carefully. What I like to do is kind of pinch it and pull, just kind of make real carefully, and then once I get it kind of started, work it down a little bit, and I'll work that down. Well, before I do that, I make my cuffs on each side, and then what I do is I run cutting inside out, down by the pelvis. You'll see there'll be like meat and then the hide.
Yes.
Slip your knife underneath that hide and run on the inside of the thigh all the way up on each side to where you made your cut, your circles.
Oh. You mentioned this earlier. I like to go in just a little bit of detail about it. You can take your finger and put the knife blade next to your finger and use your finger as a guide, keeping the point of the knife at the point of your finger. So as you run your finger inside,
you're not damaging the meat.
Right. You're keeping your finger there to keep a little bit of space between the blade and the meat, and you're using that as a guide to keep the knife moving, cutting from the inside out to make sure everything opens up the way that you want it to without damaging the meat or cutting yourself.
Right, right.
In the process.
Right. So you got... Right, so you're going from the gutting incision, basically, on the inside of the thigh on either side and running all the way up to where you made your circles behind the knee. And then what I do is I work that down all the way to the butt, get to the tail. And then with a good sharp knife, you can usually just cut right through that tailbone.
Yeah.
Real easy. Just sever it. Once I have all that kind of hanging off the bass end, I stop. I'm done with the top for a minute. So then what I do is I go down to the shoulders and... The first thing I do is the second time you're going to cut from the outside in. Go to the base of the skull.
Yep.
And you're going to cut the head off, right where the neck meets the head. You want to leave as much meat on there as possible. But you're going to take your knife and you're going to cut through the esophagus and all the meat. And you're going to get down till you feel bone all the way around. Then you're going to stick your saw in there. or a machete, I mean, if you're good.
Hacksaw would be the preferred method, or bandsaw if you got the luxury. You could hack at it with a machete, like you said, if you're good. You better have a damn sharp machete and some good practice swinging it, because that you're cutting through bone, you're separating the bone material. The only caveat I would put on that is if you do have a nice buck and you want to save it for a mount, a shoulder mount, or even just a European mount, you want to be careful damaging the hide, caping it out.
If you're going to have it mounted, the best thing to do is just take it, call your fucking taxidermist, and have him skin the fucking thing out.
Yeah, pay the $25, let somebody got a professional.
And if you've ever watched a taxidermist skin something out, you're in for a treat.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I got a chance to watch Eric Riley do it a few times, and it's like watching somebody mud drywall that really knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they make it look so easy, and then you try to do it, you're like, what the fuck? But yeah, he's a master at it. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, if you're just gonna have them out, just take it to somebody and have them skin it out.
If we're talking about strictly for meat, though, you want to get the head off the animal.
Yeah. Yep. And leave as much meat on there as possible. Like we said, go right to the base, cut around, get down to the bone, hack that off, right. and then what I do is, you know, I run my gutting incision all the way up to the bottom of the sternum. Well, I run that all the way through to where, you know, the head would be, all the way down. And then I do the same thing I did up top with the hind legs.
Kind of cut the cuff around them.
You go, but this one you kind of find the ankle, you find that that joint and that tendon, and you kind of feel, you may have to do some experimenting, but you can kind of bend it and you'll feel where the weak points are.
Right.
Get your blade in there, cuff around. So I guess there's three times you cuff from the outside in. So yeah, you cuff around and then you can pretty much just pop that off if you're a bad motherfucker, or you know, use your knee.
This too
just come right off.
We can talk about the whole time you're using the same buck knife, the same, say a full tang, a sturdy knife. Now, when you go to separate like a joint or something, it's not a bad idea if you got a fillet knife hanging around to get a blade that's a little more flexible. Because when you talk about, you know, separating joints or popping things out of socket, it's not a bad idea to get a flexible blade in there sometimes.
Yeah.
And just kind of poke around maybe where your finger can't, and
you'll feel it relax as soon as you hit it. You can just feel like, ugh.
Yeah,
and then you could pop it back the other way and usually take it right off.
Sure.
So you want basically the front feet off, and then do what I did up top and run from the inside of the thigh, kind of from the armpit all the way down on either side. So basically what this is going to look like is like if you were to draw a line down the middle of the deer, like if the deer's laying on its back, you draw a line down the middle,
right,
and then it's got a line coming out on each leg,
yes,
and all the way down through the head. So then it's just a matter of pulling and cutting. I mean, just yank, and if you got to make a few, and you'll see where you need to cut, kind of angle the blade away from the meat, you know, so you're not cutting into that. But
this again is where a good sharp blade comes in handy, because if you get a little bit of separation between the skin and the meat, you know, say you're holding the hide with your left hand and knife in your right hand, as you pull that hide away, you're going to notice, I'm going to call it Velcro, but it's like a sort of a waxy, the skin, I guess, where it sticks to the meat. You just want to get your knife in there, and it doesn't take much.
I missed the beginning of that. Were you talking about the tallow?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it doesn't take much. Just once you get that separation, the skin from the meat, with your knife, as long as it's sharp, it's a cinch just to run it down where the meat is separating from the skin and keep that going as you work your way down.
So you weren't talking about, you were just talking about the
connective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, so you use your elbow, put your weight into it.
Or if you got a couple friends that can hold on to the hide for you.
Some kids.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
As it comes around the hindquarters.
Just watch what you're doing with the blade, but.
Right.
So that you get your hide off, and you'll see if you wait to take the head off or wait to fuck with the shoulders, what'll happen is that hide is gonna pull down and be in your way. So, like I said, I get down to about the tail and I stop, and then I handle the front shoulders, and it'll just make it a lot easier. Then you can just pull it right off and be done with it. So now you got the hide off. Now you got this naked Barbie doll looking thing hanging from your garage, right? You need to remove all the bad. That's the first thing I do is I remove all the bad meat before I forget, because it's an easy thing to forget to do.
Yeah, we haven't talked
about. I don't know why, but it is.
We haven't talked about that yet. Obviously, whenever you make a shot on an animal with an arrow or with a gun, there's going to be an area where the projectile enters the deer, and it's going to ruin that section of meat. You know, wherever it comes through, it's going to destroy. If it's an arrow, it probably doesn't have as big a path of destruction as, say, a slug would or a sabot or whatever from a muzzleloader. But you want to get that, and you'll notice it. It looks different than the rest of the meat. The rest of the meat should have a dark red, maybe like a maroon color to it. Where you made the shot on the animal, it's going to be bright red, bloodshot. It'll stick out. It'll be jelly. Sometimes burnt. Yeah, it'll have a little bit of a jelly texture to it. You want to get all that.
Now, I want to say, if you put a shot through the ribs, especially with a gun,
yeah,
what you see isn't all that's there, because once you start pulling back that that fat and all the meat on the ribs,
yeah,
that kind of cover it, it'll just be everywhere, yeah, through there. I mean, it expands quite a bit.
And that, too, that's the damaged blood. If you don't clean it right away and hang it and let all that blood kind of drain out of it and get away from where the, you know, it'll settle in the meat, and that can give the meat a really bad taste.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really gamey and, I'll say foul, for loss of a better word, but
don't. You can't be stingy with your meat when you're cutting out bad meat. I mean, I give it a pretty wide berth. You know, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know. So you get your damaged meat out, which would probably involve just taking out some rib meat and
sure. Yeah, ideally.
Yeah. I mean, if you hit it in the shoulder, you got kind of a mess on your hands, but
it just depends on where your shot was. Yeah. You know, the angle of your shot. How much damage it did when it got inside the animal. So it's easy to tell what you need to get rid of and what you want to keep.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that doesn't look, it's better not to take a chance with it, is what I'm saying. Anything right. That looks like you might question it, just get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't mess around. Make yourself sick, make somebody else sick, or the worst case scenario, you know, you feed somebody this meat that's not ideal and they decide they don't like it and they never want to try it again. You know, they're never going to have an interest in going out to get their own meat. You're going to turn somebody away from what we want people to have more of a part of.
Exactly.
So.
Yep. So you got your bad meat off. Now, the next thing I like to do is make sure you got a hole at the bottom, which would be where the neck is with the trach. So you're talking about getting that trach out.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you need to make sure that there's you can see the floor.
Yes.
Or whatever, either the kiddie pool or whatever the hell you have under them.
Right.
But you're going to want something.
A bucket.
There's going to be blood. There's going to be, yeah. Or tarp.
Yeah. Cardboard.
Know.
Anything.
So make sure that's open, because what I'd like to do is I rinse out the inside. So you get, you know, where the bowels and the stomach and all that shit was, the poop chute. Rinse that out real good.
Now, in the wintertime, if you are lucky enough to have some snow on the ground, what I do sometimes, I'll just scrub it out with snow real quick. Before
yep.
I throw it in the back of my truck,
yeah,
I'll get a handful of snow,
that too, yeah.
You know, toss it on the inside of the animal, kind of scrub around in there. Just, you know, take a bottle of water, rinse it out real quick to get not all of it, but most of that stuff out of there, just to get it as clean as possible while you're in the woods, so you don't have to worry about dragging all that stuff back into your house, into your garage. Or
well, like I try to imagine it, like if I feel better if I do it with the snow right away, because I imagine like the little germy fuckers are just like bedding into the fucking meat, you know,
right.
Anytime. But yeah, no, absolutely. If there's snow, that's the best thing you can use, just throw some snow in that shit. But if not, when you get it hung, just rinse it out. I like
yeah.
to at least wet a towel. Is what I don't. You don't want to. You know, I don't like to put actual water on it. Like
right. Yeah. You don't want to like take yeah. the garden hose and run it inside of the deer.
Moisture is not your friend. Moisture also breeds bacteria. So you don't want.
Right.
This is probably the only. This is the only time you're going to get it wet.
But you could flip it over when you're done field dressing it sometimes and grab it by the front legs and kind of drag it with the top
yep.
of the deer up. If you got a little bit of snow, drag it through the snow, and that will help scrub some of that stuff out. And that way, whatever comes out, you never have to mess with. You just drag the deer through the snow a little bit. You'll be able to see when all that stuff kind of cleans up, or it's not pulling out the blood and pieces of whatever, if you got a, you know, that stuff in there. It's just a lot easier to do it.
And speaking of those pieces and stuff too, like so you wipe it down with a towel.
Yeah.
And then I also, because there's going to be some fatty chunks and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
this and that. So just take your knife and just kind of carefully clean everything up. Careful, don't nick your tenderloins. We'll get to those here in a second. But yeah, just clean it up. You want it nice and clean. If it looks sketchy, get it out of there.
Yep.
Because like I said, all that bad shit is right there.
Yep.
You know, it's all in one isolated area, so you want to make sure that's good and clean.
Now, I'll say, too, if you do happen to nick the stomach, there's going to be some fluid that comes out of it, or the bowels, the intestines. wherever that fluid touches, you want to pay special attention to. You want to rinse that out immediately, or if it's not too bad, you know, take your knife, kind of trim that meat out, because the stomach bile especially will make that meat go rotten fast. I mean,
yep.
I won't say like overnight, but if you ever have smelt it, you know that anything that stuff touches is trash. It's garbage. You want to get rid of it. If you can't clean it up immediately, you might as well just count on trimming that meat off later, because it's not going to be worth eating.
Right. Which sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody likes losing meat.
No. You don't go out there to hunt to, you know, lose your meat in the processing process.
Right. And get all the, and so you rinse it off, and also right now you need to take the time to get all the fucking hair off.
Yeah.
Because you're going to want to do that now. So on the backside, so you're going to want to wet down a towel. I guess I do wipe the whole thing down with a wet towel. I was going to say, because it's almost easier to take it with a dry towel before the wet towel and get all the hair off.
I mean, you can do that, or I've seen people, like, if you got, like, a weed-burning torch, just fire up your torch real quick. Any of that hair that's on the meat will singe off almost instantly as soon as it gets around heat. So you run a torch over it real quick. Mm-hmm. All that meat singes off. It doesn't do anything. You're not cooking the meat with it. You're just running it over the meat real quick. And it takes care of all that hair. You know, it saves time if you're worried about that. And like I said, you're not holding the torch on it. I know I said you want to keep the deer cool. This is just to get the hair off the animal.
Right.
When you're done skinning it. Because there's nothing you can do about it. You're going to get hair on it. There's going
to
be hair everywhere.
Yeah, like we said earlier, you want to try to cut from the inside out as much as possible to avoid that situation, but it is unavoidable. You're going to have some.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of the process.
Yeah.
You know.
So, now you got this thing nice and clean. You got all your scraps cleaned up. Got it wiped down. Got all the hair off. Now for my favorite part, which is taking out them juicy tenderloins. Now, the tenderloins, for those of you that don't know, are the filet mignon, those little steaks. Oh, thank you, sir. That are, thanks, Garcon. on the inside there, kind of hugging the spine. You can almost take those out without a knife. All you need to do is kind of work your finger in behind them. We should post a picture of where they're located, because it'd make it a little easier to explain for people who don't know.
If the deer's hanging from the back legs, you want to kind of look on the inside of the deer, right where the chest cavity, where kind of sort of the rib cage stops, heading towards the back of the deer. It'll be on the inside, like you said, hugging the spine. They won't be very big. These tenderloins, on a mature deer, would you say maybe a foot?
Yeah.
Maybe 14 inches, 16 inches maybe. And if you don't know that it's there, it's easy to overlook those cuts of meat, and you're doing an incredible disservice to yourself and the people that are going to eat, you know, the meat that you're harvesting, because they're called tenderloins for a reason.
And they're in my opinion, the other than the back straps, the best part. Now, quick story. Did I tell you that Evan and Ethan, my kid, when they cleaned up the deer they shot while I was at camp, they didn't rinse it out good enough.
Okay.
And I, if I remember correctly, they left some of the butthole in there.
Yeah.
Oh, and that was draped. And so you got to be careful. Those tenderloins, where they're located, is right where that bad shit is.
Yes,
too. So if you pop something open and don't clean it up right, you're going to lose your best cut of meat, which is exactly what happened.
Running the risk of, losing some of the best bites on the entire animal. Now, what we didn't mention when we talked about gutting the animal is that some people take the offal, the intestines, the inside. Yeah. Like I've said before, I love eating deer heart. There's nothing better to me. Tenderloin's great. I love that. But the heart is something that you can take the next day and eat and enjoy. Like I saved mine for Christmas morning. It's just a tradition that we have. But the heart, the liver.
The caul fat, which I can't remember if we covered this already. But the caul fat, what that is when you cut it open, kind of surrounding all those organs there, it's like a spider web looking.
Yeah, it does look kind of like that fake webbing. Spider web stuff. Yeah, like a webbing of fat.
And with like silly string, it's weird looking, but
it's like a net, sort of like a net.
Yeah, you can do some pretty cool shit with that. So I mean, if you think about it and have a way to transport it, get it. You save it.
Harvesting every usable part of the animal is kind of what we're after here. So I know guys that cut the tongue out of the deer. Some guys are into that. You don't have to do it, but if you like liver.
I've heard tongue is kind of a, we'll get into that in the next episode.
Different.
Yeah, so the tenderloins. So yes. Those are the one thing that I like to cook the night of or the next day after I cook it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're awesome. So just peel them right out. Rinse them, for Christ's sake. Rinse them again because, like I said, those are sitting in a sketchy spot.
Right. Now, you can also soak them in water if you got time. A little bit of salt water. The salt will help pull some of that blood out of the meat. You rinse them when you cut them out, when you get them out. You rinse them when you put them in the fridge or however you want to prepare them, if you're just going to leave them out, if it's cold enough. But, yeah, cleanliness, you can't get them too clean.
Right. And you know, a perfect scenario would be, you know, you shoot a deer Saturday morning. You get to clean them up all day.
Right.
Then Saturday you throw the tenderloins on the grill in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, and the weather's perfect and all that shit. But for the situation, it's a Tuesday night, and you got to get shit handled right now. Throw them in a bag. Rinse them off. Throw them in a bag. Deal with them later.
Right.
And then you're going to need to get that deer somewhere cool, which we talked about the garage fridge, which is a lot of people, I don't know, I can't be the first person to think about that.
No, we did say that hanging, when we say hanging, it's not that the deer has to be hanging the entire time. If you have a garage fridge, it's acceptable to quarter up the deer, get it in pieces that are manageable and small enough to get inside the fridge and then leave it sit for a couple
which
days
we
in the fridge.
Which is quartering.
Right.
Which we're going to get into now.
And it's the same kind of deal. The meat still has time to age a little bit. It doesn't have to be hanging upside down to age. It can age in the fridge just the same as it can age hanging in your garage. So the idea is just to get the meat cool so you're not losing it to any adverse spoilage.
Right, right. So first things first, I cut the paunch meat. What the paunch meat is you have your ribs, and then between your ribs and your hips, there's like if you see an animal standing broadside,
yeah,
okay, and you see like there's like the extra skin, it looks like, between the rib cage and their stomach.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like
what I mean?
Like a cape sort of that, yeah, comes off,
yep,
of
that's
the rib
paunch.
Cage.
Yeah, and the paunch, there is good meat in there. There's a lot of fat, but there's also a lot of good meat. So what I like to do is go along that last rib and run it all the way down. Cut as much as that paunch off as I can, and then
right.
if there's a lot of good shit on it, I throw it in a bag and I save it for the grind pile.
And it depends on the deer. A lot of times that'll be layered in there, kind of like bacon a little bit. There'll,
yeah,
be like a layer of meat and a layer of fat and a layer
yeah, kind of like how the rib is too. The paunch meat kind of extends up through there.
Yes.
That's what we were talking about, like when you shoot one and all that jelly blood just goes everywhere.
Right.
Because it's layered.
Yeah.
That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah, so I remove all those paunch, and then I get right on the back straps. I want to get them off first. That's the second best cut of meat.
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, gold medal cuts here. The tenderloins and the back straps are primo when it comes to tenderness, obviously. Flavor, the ease of getting to them. The back straps are a little harder. You kind of got to know what you're doing, and it helps to have a knife that has a little bit of flexibility to it, like,
yep,
a 6-inch fillet knife or, you know, a 10-inch fillet knife would almost be ideal. The back straps are located. So we got the tenderloins from inside of the belly cavity. If you were able to take that deer and rotate it 180 degrees, so now you're looking at essentially the back of the deer. The back straps start, we just have midway up the rib cage or so.
Yeah, about where the shoulders are.
Yeah.
And then, because I'm glad you went there, because I was going to ask you, where the hell do you start and stop these things? Because it's like every time I'm doing a deer, it's always like, could really call this back strap too.
Right. What I do is I start with the spine in the center of the deer, and you want to work a finger down either side of the spine. You'll feel it kind of separate a little bit. That's where I start my knife, and I kind of lay down.
You're right, but for starters, just for when they're looking, backing up, like where for the top and bottom.
Yeah, I would say maybe
like you said, the shoulders and then probably
just,
right,
just behind
the
shoulder, and I would say it runs back to right in front of the hips.
Okay, yep. All right, so continue.
So, and they'll be, 2 foot long sometimes? They can be.
That big fucker I shot this year, I think I measured him at 25 inches. He was big enough where I got a tape measure out.
Yeah. and they can be, it's like a medallion. So you're cutting. Like a tennis ball tube,
You guys have seen pork loins, I'm sure, at the grocery store.
Right.
I
yeah,
mean, it's just
very,
a big
very
log
similar
of fucking
to that
meat. I mean, it's just.
So you find where you can
honestly take your hands right now and run them on your back. Just go to the left or the right of your spine, yep. And you'll feel that big muscle. That's what the straps are.
And that I always start with the spine because it's easier to figure out where they start and they stop. You know, trace down the spine, there'll be a spot where it kind of, the meat itself stops and you run sort of into the ribs.
Top of the ribs.
Yeah.
Like where they curve into the spine.
Yep. And that's, I've never seen one come out perfectly. You know, you're always going to have a little tear here or there. But when you run it down either side of the spine, you'll feel the separation. You can kind of get your hand in there and work it around.
Getting it started is really the hardest part because you're kind of run mine on the bone of the spine.
Right.
And you're just kind of running it down and peeling it back until you get it. Once you get it started, it's pretty, I mean, like you said, getting a good flexible knife in there to get down in there and just ride that bone.
Yeah, because the meat itself will separate on its own. It'll kind of show you where you need to pull, where you need to cut. Once you get around it a little bit, you can get it separated and start to pull it out. And then all you do is take your knife and just trace along really the spine all the way up to where the back straps stop and all the way down to where they start.
Yeah, and it'll just be able to peel right off
yep.
from the spine towards the ribs. And then, I mean, eventually you'll...
You want to do your best.
Big-ass log of meat.
Yeah, if you do the job well, you'll end up, like you said, with two big logs of meat. There'll be some silver skin on them.
We're going to get into that in a minute.
Okay. So once you get those off, you want to set them in a bag or, you know, rinse them off, like you said, with the tenderloins.
Yeah.
Get them clean. And then just set them aside. They're...
Yeah, just set them aside for now. We'll talk about that silver skin in a minute because that's important for storage. So I got the back straps off, got the tenderloins out.
Right.
I move on to the front shoulders. Pretty easy to remove. I mean, it's connective tissue. You can take them off with a knife. So just kind of take that front shoulder, move it away from the body. And I always start like where the armpit.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, you'll see it where it's hanging on, just slice through it, and eventually it'll just pop right off.
If you, look at where the muscles connect and kind of find a seam to start in, and you can work all the way down the seam in the armpit until you get to the socket itself. Once you get all that meat out of the way, that arm will move fairly easily on its own.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's just separating the ball from the socket.
Yeah, well, I don't even think there is a ball and socket on the front shoulder. It's connective tissue.
Okay.
The ball and socket, you're thinking of, I think, the
hindquarters. Yeah.
That's the one that's what we'll get into next. The hindquarters, what I do is, so I'll cut where the spine kind of goes into the hips. The front shoulders are gone. Your straps are gone. Your ribs are still there, and you can do some cuts with the ribs.
Right.
But what I do right then is I just cut that spine off. So I'm just left with two hind legs connected at the hip.
Right.
So I take that down off the gambrel hook. And what you want to do is you want to start cutting down from the inside of the leg until you get down to that ball joint. And you kind of pop that bitch, and you can kind of feel around, and you'll see what I mean once you get there. I mean, you'll know when you pop it.
Yeah.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
You just want to separate that from the spine.
From the top of the femur.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then you want to cut as much meat away as you can from the inside of the pelvis. So all that meat comes away with the hindquarter and isn't left on the pelvis. You do that on either side. I mean, it sounds fairly easy, but that ball joint can be kind of tricky, and you got to put some ass behind it.
Yeah, it's good to have a flat area where you can kind of lay it down and sort of lean into
it
a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
This
is the one you want to do on a table.
Yeah.
You know, so you can really put your ass into it and break it off. So, okay, so now you're left with, you're quartered out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to let it age, so if you got it that way and you're putting it in the fridge, what you want to do is, you know, there's racks.
Yeah.
You want air to hit all that stuff.
Right. You don't want to just throw it into a big pile and you know, in a bowl or whatever and just call it good.
No, they need to be separated, and they need to have air circulating on all sides of that meat.
Right.
And, so the side that's down, what you want to do is, you know, rotate that bitch. Exactly. Ray learned a lesson the hard way this year. So go in the next day and just rotate it.
Right. It's something you want to keep an eye on.
What happens if you don't? It gets slimy.
Yeah.
I mean, you start growing bacteria on there, and you don't want that shit.
Right.
So you let that age for, let's say three. I don't go any less than three, no more than seven.
Okay.
I mean, I guess there has been a few times where I've had to cut them before 3 days, and I can tell you can taste the difference.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot more gamey. This is the spot where really patience comes into play. You can start eating the straps and the tenderloin right away, but you really want to give yourself some time to let that meat do what it's going to do in your fridge, do what it's going to do in your garage, whatever, however you got it. But just let it get ready for you to eat it.
Right. So now we're moving on to the butchering after it ages.
Okay.
You're pulling it out of the fridge. Now this is the part that everybody's scared of. You know, I mean, for a guy that's doing it for the first time, it can be pretty intimidating. You're looking at all these, you know, it's a lot of meat.
So let's take it one piece at a time.
Exactly.
Let's
start with what you're going to need first.
Okay.
I like to use a good fillet knife.
Yeah.
You're going to want a good fillet knife. You're going to want a good, thick, hardy knife that you can cut through some.
Like your buck knife or
something
with a good backbone to it.
Yep.
And you're going to want to make straight cuts. For some of this, and some of it you're going to want a blade that flexes a little bit to, you know, just give you a little bit better range of motion, but also keep a knife sharpener handy. There's nothing wrong with sharpening your knife whenever it needs it, because you're going to be doing a lot of work with it.
Absolutely.
So yep. Keep it sharp.
So now we got a storage issue, so it's kind of up to you what you want to do with it. Now, I've done it just about every single way there is. I've done vacuum sealer. I've done the 2-quart Ziploc bags.
Right.
I've done the shrink wrap and the butcher paper. But I got to tell you that when we were talking about the silver skin, we might as well get into this now. I prefer, no matter what way or what you're putting your meat into, I prefer now to leave the silver skin on when you freeze it. Not only because it helps protect the meat in the freezer and you can leave it in there for longer,
right?
But also because it's easier to remove when that meat is half-ass frozen.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Where initially you wanted air to get to the meat, and here when we're talking about breaking it down, butchering, really what you want to do now is keep the air away from the meat. Once you get it cut up into the sections that you like, however you want to cut it, steaks, burger.
When you're storing, you vacuum seal.
Air is meat's worst enemy in the deep freeze.
So we'll just go through that real quick. I mean, vacuum sealer, You're good for a while. There's no air in there.
Right.
Shrink wrap and butcher paper. I wouldn't hesitate to eat something after being in the freezer for 2 years.
I had a couple years ago, I took one of my smaller bucks to a processor who used butcher paper and shrink wrap like that. And as long as you're thorough and you do a good job, I'd say it's just as effective as vacuum sealing.
Absolutely. Because what you're trying, you're combating freezer burn.
Yeah, which is just air getting to your meat. And causing spoilage prematurely.
Right. And, you know, so you can use the 2-quart Ziploc bags, which I've done plenty of times, but if you're one of them people like me and my family, we shoot a lot of deer.
Right.
So it takes us kind of a little bit to go through it. Now, if you're going to go through it really quickly, that's fine.
Sure.
I mean, but Ziploc bags don't last long. I mean, if you leave it in there,
How long
would you say you got before it starts to go bad?
I wouldn't give it a year. This, again, depends on how thorough you are, making sure you get all the air out of the bag when you put it in the freezer. But with a Ziploc bag, even with a Ziploc freezer bag, I would say a year tops.
Yeah.
If you do a really good job.
I would say less than that. I'd be sketchy as
8 months or so.
8 months, yeah. 7 months, that'd make me nervous.
But if you're going to use bags, make sure you have plenty of them on hand. Go to the store before you decide to start cutting this deer up and buy a box. Buy a couple boxes because you're going to go through a lot of them.
Right.
We have a food saver, and I always make sure I got plenty of vacuum seal bags ready because it's going to take some time, and it's going to take some equipment, some necessary, you know, a stack of bags, a roll of vacuum bag material, whatever.
Right.
So have everything you need on hand because you don't want to get halfway into this and then have to make a run to the store.
Absolutely.
You know, that's
absolutely.
When you sit down to do this, you kind of want to have the mindset where, you know, I'm going to start here and I'm going to finish today, or if you only got a couple hours, you know, I'm going to start and I'm just going to get this one hindquarter done, or I'm just going to get this one front leg done today. You know, you want to have enough materials on hand that you don't have to stop what you're doing and go out to get more. So be prepared, I guess, is the blanket statement there.
If you're just gonna put your nose to the grindstone and do this thing, I mean, a big deer, shit, That last one took me a while.
But yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at a year and a half buck, I don't know, a couple hours. I mean, you should.
Yeah, it could be anywhere from, you know, to do the whole deer, 3 or 4 hours, if it's small enough.
If you're by yourself, if you got some help, it goes much quicker.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that too. This is the fun part where you call your buddies up get a case of beer. And, hey guys, come on over. Bring your knife.
It starts out fun. By about an hour and a half into it, you're like, God damn. But I mean, yeah.
But growing up, what my dad did with his deer is that we'd be cooking, say, the heart or the tenderloin or the back straps while he's butchering the deer. He'd have a skillet there with some butter Crisco in it, you know, some onions, whatever. He'd be cooking the deer as he's cleaning it, because that kind of helps break up the monotony of,
right,
oh, here's another leg quarter to bone out, stake right. out, you know, right. however you want to do it. So
you got this thing quartered. I like to start with the shoulders.
Yeah.
It's an easy cut. So what I do is I take a front shoulder and I throw it on the table. Now, the first thing I do is the shanks. Now, what the shanks are is that it's the area between the knee and the ankle, right? Now, it looks like there's a shit ton of meat there, like meat. So people, you know, if they're doing burger meat, they'll try to bone that out, yeah. chunk it up. But I can tell you right now, you're not going to have
you pretty much only try that one time.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tendons and stuff in there, but you don't want to throw it away. So what I found to do is roasts.
Yeah.
Just I cut it right at the knee and throw it in a bag. And
you're talking, this won't be like an 8-pound roast or anything like that.
This is smaller. No, this will feed you.
Yeah. But it's a good thing to do with it. You know, a roast is low and slow,
yep.
which we'll get into.
Yep.
Help break some of that connective tissue down.
Absolutely.
But you don't want to waste it. That's the point.
Right. Yep. So
there is good meat there, and you want to get everything you can off the animal. That's a good place to start.
Right. Yep. So I just cut that out. And the shoulders, to me, we used to just bone them all out and chunk them up for burger.
Right.
Which is pretty time consuming. And you can do that. It's a little bit, like I said, time consuming, but you really can't fuck that up.
Burgers.
Cut everything in a burger as far as the shoulders. But so I take the shank off. And what I try to do when I'm looking at the shoulders, I use the shoulders for roasts. So I want to try to look at chunks of meat that are not only going to fit in my crock pot, but they're right. going to be even.
Right.
With a year and a half buck, I figured for the shoulder from the shank and the shoulder itself, I can get 3 roasts out of that total.
Okay. Now, do you take the bone out first?
Nope.
Or do you leave the bone
in? I go bone in.
Okay.
And when you're done, the way we're going to teach you how to cook it, it's going to be nothing but bone left. I mean, dude, it's the shit, and it's so easy. And that's a good way to get people introduced to venison, too. You can cook that in your crock pot, throw some shit in there. And it's one of them things where you're like, people will eat it and not even realize what it is.
That's what my grandpa used to do with us growing up. He would cook something in a pot, and he would say, here, you guys, this is really good. Try it. And we would never ask what it is. We just figured if grandpa's giving it to us, it's got to be good. Well, I've eaten possum, groundhog, raccoon. I've never had coyote. Thank God.
I have, actually.
But that's how I was introduced to a lot of these moose, bear, even deer. If somebody cooks it and it's good, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, I've had people at my house before. We'll get halfway through a meal, and I'll say, how do you guys like that black bear? And they'll stop eating because it's a bear. Well, it was good before you knew it was a bear. What's the problem?
Right.
So it's a good way to get people into it. Without really cramming, you know, this wild game down their throat.
Yeah, and roasts are quick and easy. I love them. Because it's like, matter of fact, I have one cooking right now. Because I was going to be busy all day with this shit. So when I get home, dinner's already going to be done. That's the shoulders. Quick and easy, pretty simple. And like I said, unless you want to bone them out and chunk it up for burger, which is perfectly okay. I've done that plenty of times. But no, it's so time-consuming.
If it's a big enough deer, you can also get some small steaks out of it, if that's what
you're into. Yeah, that's another thing, too. You can do bone-in steaks with them, but if you're doing this for the first time, that's not even a road we want to go down.
Right.
Get that shit up in your head. Because to be completely honest with you, I'm not even sure how to go about doing that.
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time.
I bet, yeah. So those are the front shoulders. Then if to kind of take a break for myself between going on to the hindquarters, I go to the straps.
Okay.
Remember we laid out that chunk of meat, and you got your silver skin on there. I like to leave that on. Now you got a couple options. If you're going to cook them as steaks, which I like to do for a year and a half, 2.5-year-old bucks, those are stakes no matter what. Right. I'm not doing anything else with those. Those older ruddy bucks, you can do some different things, and we'll get into that. But so you can either chunk it up into chunks of stakes, probably I would say 2.5 inches to where you could butterfly them later.
Right.
Or you can take the silver skin off now if you really want to get crazy. Take it off, butterfly them. But what butterflying is, you cut down the middle almost all the way through and then just kind of fold it out.
So let's say, let's say you got a 3-inch medallion, right? You cleaned all the silver skin off it. What you do, you find the center of that and you cut, like you said, almost, you leave maybe 1/4 inch at the bottom.
So the thinnest part of the steak is the middle.
Right. And then you open it up like a butterfly.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's what you work with.
Yep. Or you can just, what I like to do now is I'll just chunk it up. You know, I'll take a back strap, cut it in half, leave the silver skin on, and just throw the whole thing in a wrap it in a butcher paper and shrink wrap.
Yeah.
And call it good. But that's just an easy thing to do. It kind of breaks it up a little bit. So then you get to the hindquarters. The hindquarters is where you're going to spend the majority of your time with this deer. I mean, there's a lot of muscle groups. There's a lot of good meat. It's just time consuming. The first thing you can do with it is bone it out and leave it boneless for like smoking.
Right.
Which is my new favorite thing to do, by the way.
Yeah.
So you're going on the inside of the leg, and you follow that bone all the way down and carefully. I mean, you're basically just cutting that bone out.
Yeah, we should talk about when you do this, you don't want the meat to be, you don't want to have a hindquarter sit out for 2 hours and then decide to process it.
Right.
You want your meat to be chilled, just for ease of cutting it up. You don't want to have a hot piece of meat, or even a room temperature piece of meat that's going to be a little bit softer, a little more supple, and you might not get a clean cut on it just because of how soft
you should be wearing a sweatshirt when you're cutting up your deer. Yeah, I mean, honestly,
it's something best done outside, I think.
Yeah.
You can do it inside. There's, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's more nostalgia to it for me to be outside where I can see my breath, you know.
I like to be in a garage at night so I can see.
Well, yeah. But
yeah, I mean, you want it to be cool wherever you're at. You can bone it out for brining and smoking later. And like we were talking on the way here, you know people that bone it out,
yep,
and then break it up into the muscle groups without that bone in there, which is...
You can follow the line in the muscle groups to get down to where the bone is, and then it's just a simple matter of rotating that bone around to cut it out. There's not much that holds the meat onto the bone once you actually get into it, so that's a pretty easy thing to do.
It's going to take a little bit of experimentation. Just don't be scared. Like, just take that leg, flip it over, you'll see where that bone's at.
Yeah.
Get a flexible blade, a good flay knife, and just run down one side of it, and you'll see. You can feel right where that thing runs the whole way down, and then just go on the other side and just carefully take it out. It's really easy to do, honestly, but you're going to have to feel around a bit.
That's part of the fun of cutting it up yourself, though, is learning about these different muscle groups, figuring out the best way to do it to save, you know, to get the bone out while keeping that piece of meat whole, keeping that all those muscle groups together, and then you're left with just a bare bone and a great big ham of meat that you get to decide what you do with from there.
Right, and like you said, you can then start to break up the muscle groups if you want to do it like that, or if you don't want to bone it out, you can just follow all those. There's these seams. I mean, you can see them. I mean, there's the whitish.
Yep.
I don't know. The seams is the best way I can describe them.
It's where the muscle.
You can see where the muscle groups divide. I mean,
yes.
And you just stick your knife in there, and you can just follow those, and you'll cut it. Like the sirloin tip roast, for instance, where that's the front of the hindquarter. You know, this would be. Yeah, I mean, so that's a good chunk of meat that I always like to take out. How would you say that shape like, so they'd recognize it? Like a motorcycle gas tank?
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, something like that, sort of.
Oblong. It'd be like it's like your quadricep.
Like a half-deflated football, kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Sort of.
Yeah, and I like to cut that out. That's super good jerky meat, or just cook it as a roast. Yeah, that's something you definitely want to isolate.
That's the lower part of the ham, talking more towards the knee.
Yeah, like I said, kind of like the quadricep right there in the front. You'll see it, and like I said, it basically looks like a motorcycle gas tank.
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious. You'll be able to see it separate from the rest of the muscle groups there. It kind of.
Oh yeah, I mean you can cut that in the steaks if you want. Like sure. I said, you can do a roast with that. You can. I like to do jerky with it personally.
Now we're talking about taking the bone out. There's also people that leave the bone in. They'll take the whole ham and they'll freeze it, and they'll use like a bandsaw and they'll just cut inch wide steaks out of the ham itself with the bandsaw. With the bone in, then you're left with just a little round eye,
yep.
Eye bone, basically. And then a giant, I'll call it a ham steak, but a giant deer steak out of the ham. That's one way of doing it, too. It's a little bit faster. You don't have to mess with taking the bone out of it or separating the muscle groups, but then you're left with a steak that has these, like it'll have a big ham part right in the middle, and then there'll be these little connective steak parts around it. Which is just a little different to deal with, like on the grill or, you know, cooking it. But it's really up to you how you want to do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to bone it out. You don't have to leave the bone in. It's your preference.
Yeah, I mean, you can leave the bone in and separate these muscle groups. Like we said, we can do all that too. So when you're finished, it's basically, you know.
Right.
But it, there's the, when you get into the hindquarter, besides the sirloin tip roast, without getting too fancy, naming this and naming that, I mean, for the guy that doesn't, you know, no jack shit going into it.
Right.
Once you get that off, you're just looking at all that meat is good meat. Don't use any of that for burger.
Oh, no.
You can avoid it. I mean, please don't.
You
That's
have
good shit.
This fully connected mountain of meat in front of you.
Yeah.
And you don't want to just take it apart into little pieces or grind it up as burger. Maybe you do. Some people prefer burger.
Now, that's the thing I was just going to say. I mean, there's situations where, like, say, if you kill three deer, you know, butcher two of them like normal, maybe take the smallest of the three
and have it done
all burger, because we eat a lot of burger,
right.
A lot of burger.
There's,
so
you know, burger
that would be advantageous for us to do. But yeah, so you don't use any of that shit for burger. I mean, you can kind of eyeball it, like what would make good steaks, what would make good jerky, and just kind of go from there.
Right.
My deer was big enough this year where I was actually, I don't know what the hell the cut's called.
Yeah.
But I labeled it boneless butte.
Okay.
Butte. T-A-Y. So, you know, I'm going to do pulled pork with that. I'm going to smoke it.
It's basically
then,
like the
and
rump.
And pull it and do barbecue. And
the rump section of the deer.
Yeah. Yep, that's all really lean, good meat. So don't waste any of that shit and put it in the burger. Now, getting into the burger, you're going to have a lot of, you know, like the neck, for instance.
Yeah.
You can do a neck roast with that.
Because we didn't
talking about
we didn't
that
talk about
started.
That. When you get the quarters off of the deer itself, you're going to be left with, essentially, the spine and the neck. We've taken the head off, and there's a lot of good meat on the neck. Some people have it all turned into burger because they don't want to mess with it, but you could actually take the neck where you cut it off the head and go back however far you want, you know, 8 inches, 10 inches, and cut you a nice neck roast out of
yep.
there. Bone
slow
in.
Cooker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's some of the best eating on the deer, I think, is a good neck roast in a slow cooker for 8 hours with, we'll get into that later, but.
Oh, that's delicious.
Yeah.
But you know, I personally prefer making it into burger, like I said, just because we eat so much burger.
Right. Now, I like to think of it when I butcher my own deer. We talk a lot about jerky meat. To me, the jerky meat is anything that I can't turn into a steak, but I don't want to make into burger.
Right.
Because you'll get a lot of that. Like the belly, would be like the flank steak, mm-hmm. essentially, where you can separate a lot of those layers, and there's a lot of good jerky meat in there, if you want to take the time to get to it, but it's not really good for anything else. It's not worth, you know, taking the time to cut it out to turn it into burger, because you're looking at a piece of meat that's maybe a quarter inch wide or quarter inch thick and 8 inches long sometimes. You know, it's not ideal maybe for anything but jerky. Whereas some of your hindquarter cuts, even the scraps off of them, that meat's good enough you can turn into burger. You don't want to necessarily take that and make jerky with it. So it's really up to your discretion, but I try to get as little jerky as possible to maximize my steaks, my burger. That being said, I love the hell out of jerky. You know,
It's funny. I haven't been able to bring myself to make jerky.
Yeah.
This year. With the deer I shot and my boys, it's like, I can't do it. I don't know why.
That's the beauty of it.
I'm going to do it. And then I just see that meat sitting there. I'm like, I could do something pretty cool.
Yeah.
With that. You know, wrap it in bacon.
Sure.
Smoke it, do something cool.
Absolutely.
With it. So, yeah, there's that. So just, fuck, if you wanted to, you could butcher a whole deer and maybe walk away with 2 pounds of burger if you really wanted to do it that way.
Yeah.
With the only scrap meat being the paunch and shit, what else would it be?
Just whatever trim you have, you know.
Whatever trimmings. So yeah, like you said, it's up to you how you want to do it. If you want more burger,
by all means, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, help yourself. But I've done that before and used to chat my dad's ass every time I do that, man. What are you doing with all that good meat, you know? And then, you know, the older I got and the more I learned, it's, you know, it makes me cringe when I see people taking that hindquarter meat and putting it in a burger.
Right.
Let's see. Oh, the ribs. So basically now you got your all the shoulders, the hindquarters are all cut up. Your straps are cut up. Your tenderloins are out.
Right.
All that's left is a spine and a rib cage at this point and a pelvis.
Right.
You can cook the ribs.
Yeah, I know people that do. You could also take the rib meat and make it into burger, or you could take the rib meat and make it into jerky. It's really, there's not a lot of meat on the ribs, but there's enough that you don't want to waste it. It's worth taking the time on a matured animal to get that meat away from the ribs or leave them on the ribs.
I was going to say there's methods where you can cut it just like a cut of ribs you buy from a store and cook baby back ribs.
Right.
So you can do them that way. Or, like you said, you can go in between the ribs, which it's kind of deceiving because it looks like there's more meat there than there actually is.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's not a lot there, but there's enough that the idea when you take an animal is to use every part of it that you can. You know, in our day and age, we're not taking the hide and making moccasins out of it, and, you know, we're not making a deer skin coat. You could, but we don't need to, so we try to use as much of the meat off the animal as we can, just out of respect for that animal. You know, you don't want to, it's like going to a buffet and getting a plate full of chicken, eating a piece of it and throwing the rest of it away. There's no point.
Right.
It's just wasteful. You know, you didn't put in all this work and all this time to throw that deer away.
Right.
So get what you can off of it. There's always something you can do with it.
Right.
Always. Like you said, you look at a pile of meat, you don't want to make jerky out of it. Well, there's a lot of other things you can do with it. It's really
and
limited
use
only
the
to your
internet.
Imagination.
I mean, it's good for something, for Christ's sake, right?
Yeah.
Other than Facebook. Get on there and look some shit up. I mean,
yeah, the empirical source of knowledge.
Right.
The World Wide
Web.
There's
YouTube. There's photo. There's all kinds of shit you guys can do. So, I mean, hopefully that helps you guys out enough to where if somebody will at least give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know?
It's,
and if you guys have any questions, feel free to hit us up.
Like you said, there's nothing to be afraid of. And once you do one and kind of get that experience under your belt, it becomes a lot easier to
a lot of people I've talked to are just scared they're gonna fuck something up.
Right And there's nothing to be afraid of, you know. If you make a bad cut on a steak, guess what you got? Burger meat, jerky meat,
right.
Just a screwed up cut on a steak, you know.
But then
it's still,
you know, edible. You know what not to do next time.
Exactly. Yeah, the whole thing is a learning process. Even now when I'm cutting up a deer, and I've done 20 30 40 50 deer in my life, there's still things to learn. You know, there's still little tips and
learning.
Little tricks.
Yeah.
You know, keep yourself open to the new knowledge. You know, we don't know what we don't know.
Well, there's probably people listening to this right now that do it a completely different way. That
sure.
Are probably like, God damn it. And they can't wait to text in or call in
email
Christ. Send us an email or whatever, you know.
Shoot
us
a message and let us know.
And we want to hear about it. So, on that note, I think we'll wrap this thing up. If you guys have any questions, go ahead and shoot us an email at racksforandfeathers@gmail.com.
That's A-N-D.
Yeah, not N like the podcast is. Or hit us up on Facebook. Check out our Facebook page, Rack, Fur, and Feathers. Send us a message. There's also a group if you guys want to get on there and start discussing some things. We want some feedback from you guys, so hit us up.
The people that pay attention to us on Facebook Live, thank you very much.
Yeah, the whole two of you. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Oh, shit. They're both sitting right there.
So, you guys, thanks for taking the time to listen to it. We hope you learned something. I hope you can take something away from it. Just don't be afraid. Get in there and do it. You know,
get your hands dirty.
Right.
Like I said before, if you don't know how to do something,
you'll figure it out.
Do it anyway and fucking figure it out, right?
That's right.
So, next time we're going to give you guys some recipes, some basic recipes to do. So you can cook these basic cuts of meat you guys have now. So we'll talk to you guys next time on the podcast.
All right, boys and girls, that's it. We did it. All artwork and music done by Shane Yoder. Special thanks to our editor, Kyle Pallmatter. Also, special thanks again to Eric and Michelle Fisher for letting us use their place to record this episode as well. Next time on Rack, Fur, and Feathers, we are going to talk carnivores. We're going to kick off our carnivore series, so that's something to keep your ear to the ground for. So we'll talk to you next time on the podcast.